Last week we began looking at the second trial before Pilate, and we want to continue into that tonight. Of course, we discussed a little bit the fact that there's the way the trial's laid out is difficult sometimes to decipher as we're reading between the four Gospels, and we'll see that a little bit more tonight as well, that some of the things that some of the Gospels have in this, they just have the trial before Pilate as one section, and that's what John has that we'll be looking at. But it begins in chapter 18 and goes on into chapter 19 and acts as though it's just one trial. But we know from the Gospel of Luke that at one point in there, Jesus was actually sent to Herod, and Herod had a trial with him and then sent him back to Pilate. And so when all of these, at exactly what point, which questions did Pilate ask before he sent him to Herod, and which ones when he came back, is a little difficult to nail down. So we have estimated to some degree the way these things were laid out based on what we saw from the Gospel of Luke as well. And I wanted to remind you again, when we're looking for the order in which things happen, Luke is the one that we look to. Because even though Luke himself was not an apostle like John, Luke was the one who says that what he was attempting to do was put these things in order. He's trying to make them chronological in essence. Whereas the other writers never make that claim, and so sometimes they group Jesus' teachings by topic, or they may skip something like with the case of the trial before Herod. None of the other three even mention that Jesus went to Herod, but Luke does. And so we've talked about before the importance of blending the gospel accounts together in order to get the full picture of what's going on. And we'll see that a little bit here as well, because we'll see one of the most famous things that Pilate did is again something that's not recorded by John, but that Matthew does record. And so when we get to that point, we'll mention that one. So we talked about last week at the end of John chapter 18 that Pilate was trying to get them to, it's time for me to release a prisoner to you. What prisoner do you want? Do you want the king of the Jews, or do you want Barabbas, who was a murderer and a rebellious fellow who had caused a rebellion? And all they hollered out, give us Barabbas. We want Barabbas to be set free. Well, then Pilate, and we've talked about this in our Sunday morning class in depth, what it means when it says Pilate took Jesus and flogged him, or some translations may say scourged him. Those two are synonymous, different terms for the same thing. There is a belief by some that what Pilate is trying to do here is he's trying to... Now remember, Pilate has already said, I can't find anything wrong with this guy. I can't find any fault with him. And yet he's going to flog him anyway. Some believe that Pilate was trying to ameliorate or just lessen the Jews' thirst for Jesus' death. That he thinks, well, if I have him flogged, which was a pretty vicious punishment, if I let him do that, then surely that will be enough. Surely then they'll say, okay, that's good enough. What Pilate does not understand, because Pilate doesn't care about things Jewish at all, really, when you get right down to it, he could care less. So what Pilate does not understand is the Jewish leaders' utter hatred for Jesus Christ. And the other thing he doesn't understand, and he doesn't know, because they've been lying to him up to this point about why they've actually brought him. They're all about, well, he said he was a king, and so he's rebelling against Caesar, and That's not why they brought him. That's not why they hate him. That's not why they want him killed. But they keep saying that that's it. And so Pilate doesn't know the truth. He doesn't understand, first of all, how important the idea of the Jews of worshiping one God is. And secondly, he doesn't understand that what they're really upset about is that Jesus claimed to be the Son of God. So he doesn't understand that. He doesn't understand what's driving their thirst for blood. He knows it's something. And that's why he went in. Remember we talked last week. He went in and he asked Jesus, "Your own people have delivered you. What did you do? You must have done something to make them want to kill you. What have you done?" And Jesus, of course, didn't tell him what he'd done. Because Jesus wants to make sure that the words actually come from the people themselves. And that's going to happen in this section of Scripture. Well, the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns, and they put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. And knowing what we know about the Romans and their ruthlessness, no doubt these were the longest, biggest, hardest thorns that they could find. I don't know if they have mesquite trees growing over there, but if they do, that's probably what they pick. I've seen some pictures of mesquite trees that have thorns 5 to 6 inches long. Huge thorns. And they would have used that if they could have. And thorns powerful enough and strong enough that they will puncture a car tire. That's how strong those thorns are. They're like a nail. And I can imagine if they had whatever they had, they found the biggest and the worst, the most painful thing. And they put it on his head, and then they put the purple robe on him. And we talked in our class about how his back, after being flogged, after being scourged, his back would have been bleeding and hurting. And if you've ever had a wound that then you had the cloth of some kind, maybe, you know, a shirt or even a bandage, and then that blood dries on it and sticks to that bandage, and then when you pull that bandage off, that's one of the things Band-Aid brags about, isn't it? It won't stick to the wound. That's what they brag about, because if you have some gauze or something and it gets in there and it gets dried, and then when you take that off, it hurts even worse. And they put this robe on his back, and as that blood clots, it clots with that cloth of that robe. Now, one of the things you'll find, John here in this translation, it's referred to as a purple robe. In other places, other translations, you might see crimson robe or scarlet robe. And when I say, well, what is? Well, they basically, anything from a reddish, blue, maroonish type color, all the way over to a deep, dark, royal purple. Anything in there they called purple. They didn't have 57 different shades of purple for them. It was just all of that. So everything from a maroon color or a scarlet type color all the way to, you know, a deep dark purple like we would call it. They would have said purple or crimson or scarlet, and so that's why the exact terminology differs from one to the other, but they're still talking about the same thing. And the other factor is, these are men describing colors, ladies, so they don't know the difference in scarlet and crimson and purple. It's all the same to them, isn't it, guys? That's all purple. No, that's lilac, you know, or what? That's purple. It's a light purple, and that one's a dark purple. No, that's... So guys don't pay a whole lot of attention to that a lot of times. But that idea that they would have called anything in that range. And it's also possible that there may have been more than one color on the robe itself. A lot of times those wealthier people's garments would have had maybe their stripes, or maybe the fringe of it would have been a different color than the rest or something like that. And it could be that they were just describing different things. But the idea of a purple robe, of course, carries with it the idea of this is a royal thing. He's the king, so we've given him his crown, and we've given him his robe. And one of the gospel accounts explains, too, that they put a reed in his hand as a scepter, too. You know, they wanted, Now here's the king, you know. Oh, and they would bow before him and mock him and pretend to treat him as a king, mocking him and making fun of him. Verse 3, they came up to him saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and they struck him with their hands. Now you've got to understand, the Romans didn't respect anybody's king except Caesar, their own king. They didn't have respect for somebody else. And the Romans had conquered so many kings that the soldiers were used to whooping up on kings. So to whoop up on the Jews' king was no different to them than any of the others. And they struck him with their hands. And then verse 4, Pilate goes out again and says to them, "See, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no guilt in him." Now, in some ways, what Pilate's doing here, bringing Jesus out in this robe and with this crown of thorns, he's mocking the Jews. Oh, you said he says he's the king? He's your king? Okay, he's your king. Let me show you your king. He's picking on them. You know, the relationship between Pilate and the Jews was never good. And so any chance they had to jab at each other, they were going to do it. And they're trying to jab at him. He's trying to jab back at them. See, I'm bringing out to him. But he said, "I want you to know, I find no guilt in him." So Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And then Pilate said to him, "I want you to look at this man. Behold the man. Look at him." And he's kind of half hoping that because he's had him whooped and everything, he's had him scourged, flogged, that they're going to say, "Yeah, okay, you know, that's enough. We just wanted to see him punished and we've had enough." But he does not understand, again, as we said, the depth of it. Now it's possible that it's at this point, possible that it may be a little later, but at some point along the way here, these things that Matthew records in Matthew 27 are going to come into play. Verse 6, when the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" And Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him. I find no guilt in him." And so this is very similar to what Matthew 27 says. 22 says, Pilate said to them, "What shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ?" They said, "Let him be crucified." The governor said, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they cried out the more, "Let him be crucified." And when Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but that rather the tumult was made, he took water and he washed his hands before the multitude, saying, "I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See ye to it." He says, "Look, I'm washing my hands. I can't condemn him. I found no guilt in him." Amazing, isn't it? We've talked about this before. Can you imagine a jury and a judge openly saying that this person on trial, he's not guilty of anything, but let's go ahead and beat him anyway. And then they bring him back out and say, and the crowd says, "That's not enough. Crucify, kill him, execute him, send him to the electric chair, send him to the gas chamber, hang him, whatever." You know, and they say, "Well, but we can't find anything wrong with him. We can't find any guilt. We don't care, crucify him." And so Pilate washes his hands. "I'm innocent." Now, I'm going to tell you something. He can wash his hands all he wants. And he can use the best soap of his day or ours. He can bleach them till they bleed if he wants to. He can't wash the blood of Jesus off his hands. He is responsible for what choices he's making. And he's going to have to answer to God for it. Now it is interesting. We're going to see one other thing in a little bit as well that Jesus says to him. But he's saying, "I'm innocent of this. I don't want this blood of this just person on me." And they answered and said, "His blood be on us and on our children." Can you imagine condemning your children to bear the guilt of your murderous acts? And yet that's exactly what the Jewish leaders are willing to do. And so this then, you know, he's tried several times to try to convince them, that's enough, let him go. He's not really guilty of anything. Verse 7, they say, finally, finally, after all this time, they finally come out with the truth. The Jews answered, we have a law. Remember, Pilate doesn't know anything about the law of Moses, the Jewish law. He's not interested in that. We have a law, and according to that law, he ought to die, not because he claimed to be a king and is trying to overthrow the Roman Empire. No. Because he made himself the Son of God. When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. Now remember last week, we talked about his wife coming to him and saying, I've been suffering in my dreams because this guy don't have anything to do with him. And now he hears, he said he's the Son of God. Now if you're a man, now remember the Romans, unlike some religious groups, the Romans didn't have any compunctions about believing somebody could be the son of a god. The Greeks all through their mythology had people who were sons and daughters of the gods. And those people were mighty, powerful people that often had supernatural strength and various different things. When Pilate hears that this guy may be the son of a god, he's like, oh, wait a minute. What's going on here? He's a little scared then. He's a little concerned about what's going to happen to him. I mean, you don't just go kill the child of a god and get away with it, do you? I mean, you're going to get, that god's going to be mad at you if you do that. And so Pilate is again even more afraid. And of course, he's washed his hands of the whole thing. He wants to be rid of it. But he entered his headquarters again and he said to Jesus, where are you from? And Jesus gave him no answer. Verse 10, Pilate said to him, will you not speak to me? Do you not know that I have the authority to release you and the authority to crucify you? Now he had that authority, of course, from Caesar. But Jesus turns, as he often does, he turns what is a worldly, mundane discussion into a spiritual one. Jesus answered him, you would have no authority over me at all unless it was given to you from above. And when he says from above, he's not talking about Caesar. He's saying you wouldn't be in this position to have this choice to make if God hadn't let you be here. Then he goes on to say this, therefore, he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin. It's an interesting statement Jesus makes. How many times have we heard, sin, sin. All sin is equal in God's eyes. How many times have we heard that? But Jesus says there's a greater sin here. He's not denying that what Pilate is about to do is going to be a sin. But he says there's a worse sin that's occurred here. There's one that's greater. Oftentimes, we measure sin in various different ways, and God doesn't always measure it the same way we do. But there are degrees of sin. We know that there are different types of sin, omission, commission. We know that there are sins where we compound one sin upon another and various different things. But here he's saying one sin is greater than another. Why would a sin be greater? Well, there are several things that could possibly make one sin greater than another. And think about it this way. If one person murders one person, and a second person murders 10 people, Is one of those sins greater than the other? Now, they're both murderers. They both have turned, you know, they both have destroyed their soul with that sin. But is there a difference in murdering one person and murdering 10 people? Well, sure there is. There's a difference. And oftentimes we relate it to how much it affects another person. It'd be a sin for me to cuss Randy out. That'd be bad. That'd be a sin. God would consider that a sin. From Randy's standpoint, though, he'd a whole lot rather me cuss him out, probably, than to punch him in the nose. And he'd a whole lot rather me punch him in the nose than to shoot him. See, there are levels, there are degrees to these things. I'd a whole lot rather have somebody cuss me out and not kill me. I can handle a cussing, but you know, getting killed, that's not good at all. So we think sometimes about the way it affects another person and how many other people it affects. If I was to cuss Randy out, it'd affect him and me, and maybe whoever heard it would be, you know, they'd be ashamed of me and disappointed and all these things and that. But now if I killed Randy, well, that'd affect his wife and his children and his grandchildren. It'd affect the church. And so many, you know, so many more people would be affected by that action. I'll not kill you, Randy. Okay, I'm not going. But you know, we think about these things sometimes. When we realize that different sins carry different consequences, and they affect people far more deeply. And so Jesus says that the one who delivered me over to you has a greater sin. Now, some people would say, "Well, are they talking about the priests and the Pharisees and stuff that brought him?" Chances are that who he's really, he says, "He who delivered me." He's talking about one person. Well, who would we say is the one person that delivered Jesus? Well, we'd say it was Judas, wouldn't it? So we'd say in this particular instance, Pilate and Judas. Pilate's the lesser of two evils. But that doesn't mean he's a good guy, does it? He's still evil. He's still wicked. He still delivers Jesus over to be crucified. But remember what Jesus said about Judas, the one who was going to betray him and turn him over to be crucified? He said it's better for him if he had never been born. Now, it wouldn't have been better for us, because by him turning Jesus over and by Jesus being crucified, we can be forgiven of our sins. But you didn't want to be that guy. You don't want to be the one that did that. He has the greater sin. From then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out. And I think this is probably the point at which they win the battle. If you release this man, you are not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar. And I think this is the argument that the Jews make that finally wins the battle with Pilate. If there is one thing that Pilate does care about, we already said he doesn't care about the Jews. He doesn't really care about Jesus. He's a little afraid if Jesus really is the Son of a God. That's a frightening thought. And, you know, maybe he cares a little about his wife's dreams that she had and all that. But if there's one thing Pilate does care about, it's his political career. And they just blackmailed him. They, you know what? You let this guy go, we're going to make sure word gets to Caesar that you let a guy that was trying to be the king instead of him go. And what do you think that's going to do to your political career? They're really threatening him here. If you release this man, you're not Caesar's friend. Let me tell you something. In the Roman political world, if you're not Caesar's friend, then you're Caesar's enemy. And you know what happens to Caesar's enemies? They die. Pilate does not want to be Caesar's enemy. So all the what ifs, if this guy is the son of a god, that'd be bad. There's one thing that's certain. If he's no longer Caesar's friend, that's going to be the end of him. And he has no doubt in his mind about that. And so he's sure of exactly what he wants to do. Because, hey, this guy, if he really, you know, now, again, misinformation. Jesus never claimed he was going to be a king and oppose Caesar. In fact, Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. He didn't care about the kingdom of Rome, the empire. He didn't care about that. So when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat at a place called the stone pavement, in Aramaic, Gabbatha. And he sits down then. This is actually his, you know, judge chair. It was the day of preparation of the Passover. And we talked about that in class some this morning. And we may look at that again another time as well. And it was about the sixth hour. Now, we talked about that in class this morning. Wait a minute. In class this morning we said it was the third hour when Jesus was taken to be crucified. This says it was the sixth hour. The Jews and the Romans keep time differently, remember? John is Jewish through and through. Remember, John was known to the high priest. He's very Jewish. He's keeping time in the Jewish way. Mark, that we read in class this morning, is keeping time in the Roman way. And so, when it says the sixth hour, versus when Mark said the third hour, these are the same, even though we say, wait, third and sixth, that can't be the same. It can if you started at a different point. The Romans would have started from 6 o'clock, third hour is 9 o'clock. The Jews, 3 o'clock, 6 hours, 9 o'clock. So we're getting close to the same time. But he brought him out, and he said to the Jews, behold your king. This is actually, he's not actually gone to be crucified. He's crucified at the third hour, which was 9 o'clock. This is probably still closer to 6 o'clock in the morning. The Jews, again, kept their time, the time from the midnight. The Romans really kept their time from midnight. But he says, behold your king. He's still, if he's going to crucify this guy, he's not going to do it. Their charge was, wait, he's got to die because our law, he said he's the Son of God. Pilate's not going for that. Pilate's going to say, look, this is your king. This is the charge that Pilate is going to make stick. And they cried out, away with him, away with him, crucify him. And Pilate said to them, shall I crucify your king? And the most honest thing that the Jewish leaders ever say, as recorded in Scripture anywhere, we have no king but Caesar. All of their making this facade that, oh, we're such godly people, we love God, we hate the Romans, la-di-da-di-da, the fact of the matter is, when push comes to shove, they scream it loud and clear. We don't have a king. Except for Caesar. We have rejected God as our king again. It's the same thing that the Israelites did in the days of Saul when they wanted to have a king like the nations around them. Samuel was upset. Oh, they've rejected. God said, they didn't reject you, they rejected me. Here they do it again. They had restored the nation after they came out of captivity. They had restored the nation based on faith in God, and God is our king. And they didn't have a king. Nehemiah was governor, but he wasn't a king. And they did not have another king all through that time. They had the Maccabees. Maccabees weren't kings. They were influential people that led them in battle and things like that. But they didn't have a king. And I know we say, well, what about Herod? Well, they didn't consider Herod their king. Herod was an Edomite. He was a descendant of Esau. He's not the Jewish king. He's just in there in that position. But we don't count him as our king. God's our king. We serve God. We love God. On and on. But when it comes right down to it, Caesar's really our king. We don't have any other king. They denied God. And they crucified his son. Then verse 16, so he delivered him over to them to be crucified, and they took Jesus. And we go on into the crucifixion from there. Pilate condemned an innocent man because he was afraid of his political career being destroyed by the Jewish leaders blackmailing him before Caesar. That was all it cost. Now Jesus asked the question, what would a man give in exchange for his soul? For Pilate, what he gave was a chance to be governor of a little podunk spot of Judea. And that's what he gave. He could have given that up, and he could have saved his soul. He could have said, when he asked Jesus, "What is truth?" He could have listened and he could have learned. He gave that all up for the small little piece of Judea. And he didn't even own it. He was just the governor of it for Caesar. It's amazing sometimes how little a price people put on their soul. What about you? In your life, have you ever delivered Jesus over to be crucified? We all did at one time. That's why we all needed salvation. If you have come back to Him, if you've repented of your sins and confessed Him as the Son of God and been buried with Him in baptism to wash those sins away, you've been cleansed from those sins. What about since then? One of the scariest passages in all the Bible is in Hebrews, where it talks about those who crucify the Son of God afresh. Let us never be guilty of that. Let us beware that our heart is right with God. Each and every day of our lives, as the song says, Jesus is standing in Pilate's hall. But it's really, He's standing in our judgment hall each day. And we can be true to Him, or we can deny Him, or we can reject Him. We can turn Him over to be crucified. Each and every day we have to make that choice. It's not just a one time, "Well, I did that when I was baptized." Yeah, that's good. You did it when you were baptized. But each and every day, we're faced again and again with that choice. What will you do with Jesus? What are you doing with Him? He's been nothing but true to you. He will never deny you. He'll never deny Himself. But if you deny Him, then you'll meet your fate in judgment. Same as Judas, same as Pilate. Judas's sin may have been greater, but anyone who rejects Jesus Christ will suffer eternity in hell all the same. If you have a need to respond to Jesus' invitation this evening, please do so as we stand and as we sing.